Someone's fingers ran through Primrose's long hair, combing it over his right shoulder. He fought to return to his dream of Locust's sweet laughter as they lay in the sunrise-painted meadows north of Pretty Mounds. Wildflowers spread in a blue and yellow blanket around them, the blossoms wavering in the cool breezes of spring. But the touch intruded again, fingers sensually feathering his hair.
Wake up, Berdash.
I'm not tired of you yet.
Primrose struggled to get his legs under him. His head throbbed violently. He knew that his arms were tied over his head, but he couldn't feel them. Not even a sting of numbness told him they were there, but the rest of his body burned as though he stood in a raging fire. Primrose opened his eyes. He could not quite focus on the broad, luxurious room, the cattail mats around the bed that he remembered as covered with alternating blue and red diamonds. Looked like splotches of purple. Primrose's gaze slid sideways. Theron's face appeared, a fuzzy triangle with dark pits for eyes.
Locust will kill you.
Then his head fell forward, and he saw that he had been stripped naked. Red paint circled his genitals and wound down his legs in sinuous patterns like streaks of blood.
Blood?
Eerie tendrils of memory tugged, knives glinting in moonlight, shrill laughter. Theron swayed closer.
What makes you think Locust is alive?
The fetid odor of that breath made Primrose turn his head, like the fermented leaves of a spirit plant.
She's too good a warrior to be dead.
Oh, you're priceless, Berdash. Do you think that Locust will come rushing in to save you? I have guards posted all around the temple. No one can enter or leave without my permission.
Queasiness sank claws into Primrose's gut. He braced himself by imagining Locust's rage when she found out that he was being held captive in the temple. She would burn the place to the ground if necessary to get him out.
Yes. Yes, she would.
His love for her swelled, firing a hope that had perished sometime in the terror of last night.
Why are you doing this to me, Sun Chief?
Theron smoothed clammy fingers down Primrose's chest, and an animal gleam filled his eyes.
I like you, Primrose. You're so different. You have that wonderful male body, but everything else about you, your smile, your movements when I touch you, they're all feminine. It's been a long time since I've had a Berdash lover.
Theron stepped closer to press his tall body against Primrose, and only then did Primrose realize that Theron was naked. Primrose could not stop the quiver that ran through his wounded flesh.
And just so you won't get brave, Berdash, let me tell you that Locust is dead. I got word yesterday. She was shot through the head.
Dawn spilled through a labyrinth of twisted roots, mottling Badgertail's face where he sat at the edge of a pond, studying the calm green surface. The reflections of clouds sailed across the water. He picked up a pebble and tossed it through the roots into the center of a cloud. Rings distorted the peaceful image. Badgertail let his gaze wander. Frogs splashed along the shore, startling the turtles that floated placidly with their noses poking up. The pond's wave action had scooped out a bank, providing a perfect hiding place for his small party on the run. But it proved a haunted spot. Huge roots thrust gnarled fingers out over the water. Especially in the half-light, they looked like skeletal hands groping for him. Badgertail hunched down and propped his elbows on his knees to think. Locust's nightmares had kept him awake. Twice in the night, he had been forced to clamp a hand over her mouth to cut off her screams. Flute and the other warriors had awakened in terror, but Badgertail had just motioned them back down and spoken softly to Locust, telling her that he was close and she need not worry.
What am I going to do? Should I try to sneak through the battlefield and join up with Black Birch and Elkhorn? What will I do with Locust? Her wounds have started to fester. If she doesn't get to a healer soon, she may lose that right leg.
Despite Locust's bravery last night, she had barely been able to run to the ambush site where Longtail, Cloudshadow, and Budworm had been waiting to pounce on their pursuers. Badgertail had carried her most of the way here. As dawn softened into morning, the turtles began paddling around the pond, snapping at the insects that unwisely landed on the shining surface.
Flute, loan me your war shirt.
When the warrior had stripped, Badgertail ducked under the roots and quietly wandered down the narrow shore. The breeze nipped at his bare chest and flapped his beaded forelocks against his shoulders. He angled toward a beaver run, a tiny dugout inlet that nicked the bank. 5 turtles floated there. Through the transparent green, he could see their round shells bobbing just beneath the surface. When his shadow passed over them, the turtles splashed and dove. Carrying Flute's shirt, Badgertail eased into the cold water, wading out until the ripples came up to the middle of his chest. Then he dove. The chill ate into his flesh and curled around his bones.
Blessed Father's son, this is bitter.
He grabbed onto the plants that grew on the bottom and pulled himself along, stirring the water as little as possible. Dark minnows darted around him through delicate filaments of algae. He curved out into the belly of the pond, then doubled back toward the beaver run. Ahead, gossamer hairs of mud trailed up through the still water. His eyes followed the hairs to their lumpy source, where the turtles had half buried themselves in the mud of the bottom. He eased forward, checked their shells to make certain none were snapping turtles, then began grabbing them and tucking their squirming bodies into Flute's war shirt. When he broke the surface and slogged up onto shore, the chill dawn air felt wonderfully warm against his wet skin. He headed straight for camp. Stooping beneath the protruding talons of a long dead tree, he rounded the bend and saw that the whole camp had roused, except for Locust. Flute and the other 3 warriors crouched around the fire, feeding it just enough dry sticks to keep the coals hot without smoking. Badgertail knelt beside Flute and began handing out turtles.
Breakfast. It may be your last. You'd better enjoy it. And thanks for the loan of your shirt.
He wrung out the fabric and returned the garment to the warrior. Locust lay a few hands distant. She had curled on her side, and her hair fell around her cheeks in a dark silken veil. His war shirt swallowed her slender body, keeping her warm. Her eyes fluttered open.
Always the optimist.
Badgertail smiled, watching as one of the painted turtles peed on Flute when the warrior turned it upside down. Flute gave the turtle a sour glare and shoved it deeply into the coals. To avoid blistering his hands, he held it down with a stick. After several seconds, the animal stopped fighting, and Flute laid his stick by the fireside. His 17 summers old face had aged of late. Lines etched his high forehead, giving his round face with its blunt nose a craggy look, like weather-beaten granite.
After the past 2 days, I think we're all cynical. What are we going to do, Badgertail?
I'm not sure yet. Let's eat, then we'll talk about it.
Badgertail poked his and Locust's turtles into the pit of glowing coals, keeping them down with a stick for a sufficient time before he rose and went to kneel at her side.
How are you feeling?
Like one of those turtles.
Badgertail nodded. After a night of chafing in his shirt, her wounds must have been rubbed raw.
Pretty fiery, huh?
Afraid so.
Badgertail looked down at her hands. Blood had clotted in thick circles around her wrists.
I'm thinking about taking you home, myself.
Locust gazed at him steadily.
Well, you would leave your warriors without guidance?
Whatever's happening out there, we're too far away to do anything about it. If we go home, we can gather the 200 warriors guarding the palisades and return. We'll be of more use that way than...
Locust turned her face away from him.
You don't want me to say it, do you?
What else can I do? Tell me.
Take Flute's party and find Elkhorn. He probably needs you desperately.
And what about you?
I'll be fine here. In a few days, I'll have enough strength to walk home myself. Then you won't...
That's not true, and you know it. You're sick and getting worse.
They glared at each other, waging a silent battle of wills, until Locust looked away. Her expression said she knew that he was right, and she hated having to admit it. Badgertail aimlessly scooped up sand and let it trickle through his fingers. An uncomfortable stinging had started in his guts. Locust watched him worriedly.
I can't leave you, Locust.
If I were another warrior, you'd go.
You're not another warrior.
Then assign Cloud Shadow to take me home. He's the least of these warriors. You can do without him. That way, you'll feel better about me, and you can go on and do what you know you should.
But Locust, I...
Badgertail, think of how you'll feel if you leave your forces and hundreds die because Elkhorn or Blackbirch make some stupid mistake. I'm one person. There are over 700 warriors out there who need you more than I do.
The stinging in his gut grew as if his intestines had decided to twist into knots. He gazed at her imploringly.
But, Locust, I'm afraid for you. Please, I want to make sure that you get home safely. Then I'll...
And if Elkhorn is trapped somewhere, you may cost him...
Badgertail threw up his hands, but as he did, a tight band constricted around his heart.
All right. I'll assign Cloud Shadow.
Weakly, Locust lifted her hand and patted his bare calf.
I'll be all right. It's only one day's walk from here.
Those turtles should be done. I'll get them.
Black Birch smiled his satisfaction as he rolled up his blanket. Things had gone well yesterday. They had captured one of Pataga's war parties and killed all of the warriors, even the last, who had groveled before Black Birch, pleading for mercy. Today, they would head back north and see if they couldn't join up with Badgertail.
What happened to him?
Every war party that had regrouped here had been attacked. Perhaps Badgertail hadn't fared as well as these other war leaders.
Could a bunch of corn farmers have thrashed the great Badgertail? Maybe even killed him? Well, I can lead the Cahokia forces just as expertly as Badgertail could. It makes little difference.
Black Birch tied his rolled blanket to the back of his belt, then attached his war club and slung his quiver over his shoulder. Black Birch lifted his arms over his head to stretch his back muscles. The hard ground had been full of stones. He'd tossed and turned most of the night, trying to find a comfortable position. Strands of light crept over the eastern horizon and twined through the transparent gleam of lavender that stretched halfway up the sky. Idly, he noted the positions of his lookouts. They hunched on the high spots, overlooking the three major drainages that led into One Mound Village. When they had entered One Mound yesterday, they had found it abandoned, forgotten possessions visible like ghostly sentries in the empty sockets of doorways and windows. The inhabitants had left so quickly that they hadn't even bothered to pack their stores of corn. Black Birch forces had raided every storage hut, filling their warriors' packs and stuffing themselves at dinner last night.
Did the villagers see us coming? Or did they get word from traitors like Renwing that I was recruiting warriors and they knew what would happen to them if they refused to join me?
Black Birch strode through a maze of warriors, many of whom he didn't know, toward Wasp and Beehive. They waited at the edge of camp like score sticks at a chunky game, arms folded, eyes roving the lightening heavens. Wasp turned when Black Birch strode up. He smiled at her, but she did not smile back. Her beautiful face showed her sunborn heritage in its triangular shape, high cheekbones, and pointed chin, all framed within a thick tumble of silky raven hair. The seriousness in her mahogany eyes punctured his confidence. He stopped smiling.
Have you noticed that none of our lookouts have moved since we've had light this morning?
Black Birch looked again. The dark form still stood vigilantly against the pastel backdrop of morning.
So?
Beehive shifted uneasily. Medium-sized, he possessed a moony face with soft eyes and a sensuous, heart-shaped mouth.
Maybe nothing, but it doesn't feel right.
You've got the jitters. Relax. We're going north today to connect up with Elkhorn and the other party leaders. If we meet more of Pataga's forces, we'll kill them, just like we did those yesterday.
Doesn't it strike you as odd that three of our parties wound up here, in the same place, each chasing different...
They're coming! Get your weapons!
Old Bucktooth raced down from the north as fast as his ancient legs would carry him.
Who?
Black Birch's warriors raced from the camp like a terrified herd of deer, careening between people, stumbling over packs as they fled from the onslaught. Black Birch grabbed Bucktooth's arm and swung him around.
What's happening? How many are chasing you?
100! I don't know!
He shook off Black Birch's hand and dashed for the drainage that led south. Enemy warriors burst over the hill, their bows aimed. Arrows flicked through the air around Black Birch. He turned to see Beehive sink slowly to the ground, a brightly feathered shaft sticking out of his chest. Blood frothed at his quivering lips.
Get down!
Black Birch dove for the ground and scrambled on his stomach to an up-tilted slab of limestone where he could pull his bow and knock an arrow. He fired into the oncoming enemy.
There's so many of them!
Black Birch knocked another arrow. On his left side, Pipestone's war party rushed into the screaming horde, working their bows, striking with their war clubs. A choking curtain of dust rose, curling into the scarlet wash of sunrise. Men and women fell like flies at the first heavy frost, sprawling along the ground or creeping spider-like while they held their wounds. Wasp led a group of seven warriors northward, then came racing back.
Black Birch, we're surrounded. There are more warriors streaming down out of the hills. Pataga must have organized the battle in two stages. We've got to find a place and make a stand. How about those rocks at the head of the southern drainage?
Yes, go!
Black Birch lunged to his feet and led the retreat. Lycan stopped in a field on the bank of Cahokia Creek to watch the crimson ball of the sun rise over the eastern bluff. Streamers of orange light fanned out across the clear blue sky before spilling into the floodplain in a deluge of amber. In the field, ancient tree stumps stood amidst the thistles and maygrass. Lycan wearily sank down on the bones of an old cypress, for as far as she could see, stumps dotted the expanse of land. She wondered idly how many of those trees had been maples. She had heard about maple sap. A trader had let her cousin Claycoil, who lived in Pretty Mounds, taste it once. Claycoil said it was like the dew of melted sunshine, sweet and warm and golden brown.
Why did you let people cut down all the trees, Mother Earth? Couldn't you stop them?
She gazed at the jagged gullies that cut the parched land.
It is only through our death that she lives. Our bodies provide sustenance.
Is that what this war means to Mother Earth? Hunting?
Lycan turned. Southward, shadows clung to the lee side of the mounds in the great village of the Sun Chief. So many mounds, over 100. The vague shapes of people moved around the bases. Stunted cornfields covered nearly every hand of tillable ground within one day's walking distance. The leaves on the stalks drooped like long, thin fingers reaching down to Mother Earth in desperation.
What's going to happen, Foxfire? What if I can't get into the underworld to see First Woman? Will Mother Earth let everyone die in this war so she can eat?
Lycan rubbed her forehead. In the creek bed below, fog rose from the gurgling water and roiled like earthbound clouds. While she watched, the mist shifted, forming strange, haunting shapes. One of them almost a face that peered up at her through wide black eyes. Lycan had not slept in 2 days, not since her dream of Foxfire, and she had eaten only a few roots found along the way. She felt woozy. She squinted hard to focus on the wavering face in the mist, but her vision blurred with tears of exhaustion. The sun rose higher, piercing the fog with a dagger of light, and the amorphous face glowed pink and seemed to solidify. Lycan blinked, not certain that she saw it.
Who are you? A water spirit? Have you come to take my soul?
The pink creature lifted its arms and began the steps of a dance that Lycan had never seen. It pranced on the surface of the water, its feet lifting in high steps before it began to spin. The mist swirled after the creature as it danced down the creek. Lycan crawled over the lip of the bank and jumped to the sandy shore. Silver veils of fog swept around her, clutching with cold, transparent fingers. On her left, the creek ran over a series of rocks down the channel until it disappeared in the thick fog. Lichen filled her lungs with the scents of water and damp grass. She saw nothing now, except fog. But the stone wolf resting over her heart had grown warm and heavy. Its weight seemed to be pulling her forward.
Do you know the best way to get there, Wolf? Go ahead, Wolf. You lead me there.
The weight of the stone tugged at her neck. She walked forward, parting the mist like an arrow.
They've made it down into the flats!
At Soapweed's shout of warning, Elkhorn spun around. He ripped his antler stiletto from his belt. The contents of his quiver had been exhausted long ago, like his strength. He locked his knees to keep himself standing.
Pick a spot! We're gonna have to try to stand them off, or they'll shoot us in the back!
All day they had been fighting and running, fighting and running. The three war parties under his command had entered the battle late, because it had taken time for them to grasp the layout of the terrain and get into position to shore up Black Birch's failing lines. But they had failed anyway. Pataga's warriors had just kept coming, roaring through the hills in wave after wave. They fought as fearlessly as enraged wolves protecting their pups. During the first part of the retreat, Elkhorn had been able to pluck arrows from the battlefield, but the enemy had pushed them far to the south, herding them along the bluff, until they had been forced down over the edge north of Hickory Mounds.
Blessed Father Son, at this rate they'll have pushed us back to the palisades of Cahokia by midday tomorrow. Then what will we do?
They now fought in a field of pink toad flax interspersed with tangles of buffalo gourd vines. Elkhorn could barely take a step without his feet becoming knotted in the creeping tendrils. Soapweed stood a few hands to his right, panting, sweat running down his round face. His war shirt clung to his body in blood-drenched wrinkles. About 40 members of their original war party had survived. They dotted the field, their eyes on the slight rise 1,000 hands away, back in the direction from which they had come. Enemy warriors flooded down the trail. Elkhorn made a futile attempt to count them, braced his feet, and fell into a wary crouch, his knees shaking.
Too many.
A tall, burly man targeted Elkhorn and rushed with his war club lifted high over his head. The world spun crazily around Elkhorn, while he and the warrior rolled over and over, each trying to get on top. Vines grabbed their legs and broke, crushed in the fury of the battle. Elkhorn maneuvered his opponent into a patch of prickly pear cactus. As the poisonous spine sank into the man's back, he flinched, and Elkhorn jerked his hand loose and plunged his stiletto deep into the man's side. His enemy reared up in panic. The man flopped like a fish out of water, while his ineffectual war club feebly pounded Elkhorn's broad back. The instant his enemy stopped moving, Elkhorn was on his feet, bracing for another attack. Woodchuck sprawled a few hands away, his skull split open. Already greedy flies had landed in the thick clots of blood. His warriors were being slaughtered before his eyes. Only one exit remained open, a small creek bed that led back to the north.
Soapstone! Hurry, this way!
An arrow slashed by Elkhorn's shoulder, and he turned to run, jumping the thick tangle of vines. Badgertail cautiously worked out the trail that led along the creek. Sweat had laid a fine sheen on his muscular body. Flute, Budworm, and Longtail spread out behind him. They had been heading north when they'd glimpsed the two people, but hadn't had a good look at them before they'd lost them. The leader had a talent for obscuring a trail. He had ordered his comrade to circle around on their own tracks, taking them through the creek, then jumped from rock to rock along the bank. But Badgertail had backtracked and spotted the places where their sandals had slipped off the rocks and scuffed the dry ground. He needed to determine the outcome of this weasel and mouse game. If these were Pataga's people, and they had recognized Badgertail, they might try to swing around and ambush his party. If they were his own people, well, he would find out at last what was happening. Flute stopped suddenly and knelt down. He waved to Badgertail. When he knelt by Flute, he frowned. Spots of blood dimpled the earth beside this set of tracks.
Wounded and limping. Look at how he's dragging that left foot.
Badgertail scanned the landscape. Though it might appear basically flat, cycles of erosion had cut knee-deep troughs around the creek and created a maze of possible hiding places. Moreover, clumps of flowering saltbush thrust up thickly through the dry crust of earth. In the distance, the gray bluff stood as silent witness. Overhead, ravens soared and flapped across the infinite expanse of blue. Badgertail motioned to Flute and the others to fan out in a wide semicircle, then went ahead across the desiccated gray soil as his eyes flitted from one drop of blood to the next. The trail led down into a jagged erosion channel, where the warrior had slid a good 100 hands on his stomach, leaving splashes of blood as he went. Every nerve in Badgertail's body hummed as he followed the trail up out of the channel and into a dense growth of wilted cattails. He took his time, letting Flute, Budworm, and Longtail position themselves around the boundary of the cattails. Gingerly, Badgertail pushed stalks out of his way and inched forward. He had lost the blood trail, but the warrior had to be in here somewhere.
What happened to your friend? Did he sacrifice you so he could escape?
He knelt. More spots of blood. They stuck to his fingertips.
Wet. On a day this hot, they'd have dried within moments.
Badgertail straightened warily and let his gaze wander the slitted patterns of leaves, searching for any irregularity. The cattails had already started to burst out, weeks early, a desperate attempt by the plants to cast their seeds before they died. A single stalk shuddered suddenly. Badgertail didn't move a muscle. The same stalk bent sideways. Slowly, Badgertail lifted a hand and gestured to the location. Flute and the others began tightening their circle, moving into the cattails with the stealth of cougar stalking marmot. Badgertail took another step and caught movement from his left down at the creek.
So, there's your friend.
He ground his teeth. Through the weave of grass at the edge of the creek, he could feel eyes peering out. Powerful. Malignant. The man couldn't have a bow, or he would have used it by now. Badgertail kept glancing at the grass while he moved through the cattails. Leaf blades caught on his breech clout before zipping away to flail back and forth. He took another step and spied a brown patch of skin through the dried green. Slowly, he lifted his hand to signal Flute that he had located their quarry. Flute nodded and moved in. Badgertail quietly slipped his stolen war club from his belt. A clod of dirt smacked him in the shoulder. Badgertail whirled. A flock of geese exploded from the creek, and Badgertail almost swallowed his tongue. The lanky old man trudged up from the creek bed, his tattered red sleeves flapping. Gray hair matted his temples, highlighting the hook of his long nose.
Wanderer!
First woman is so cantankerous. I can't figure out why she's convinced that you and I have to enter Cahokia together.
I can't either, since I'm not going to Cahokia.
Badgertail scrutinized the aged shaman to make sure he didn't have any weapons, then turned to the cattails again. Flute crept closer to the place where Badgertail had seen the brown flesh. A woman jumped to her feet and made a mad dash through the stalks. Budworm ran her down with little effort, though she almost beat him to tatters with her fists before he could drag her back. Badgertail looked at her bloody leg.
Meadowvole, what are you two doing here?
For the most part, we've spent the day watching your warriors flee like rats back to Cahokia.
What are you talking about?
Pataga has devastated your forces, Badgertail. I'm surprised you didn't know. We saw Elkhorn fly past only...
Elkhorn? Where's Pataga?
Badgertail's hand tightened around his war club. If a seasoned warrior like Elkhorn had headed home, Cahokia must be in grave danger. Wanderer pointed to the bluff.
About there, I should think. At least that's what Crossbeak said earlier. You'd better be getting back to Cahokia, Badgertail, or Pataga will arrive before you do.
Badgertail lifted his chin.
Could things have gone so terribly wrong that my forces were unable to hold Pataga for even a few days?
Wanderer smiled genially as he strode by Badgertail to grab Vol's arm.
Well, it's good to see that you're still alive, Badgertail. Vol and I have to be going now.
Wanderer briskly led Vol off in a westerly direction. Flute turned to gape at Badgertail. He waved a hand irritably.
Yes, go stop them.
As Flute charged off, swinging his war club, Badgertail's eyes returned to the bluff.
Can Pataga really be up there? So close to Cahokia?
He kept staring and caught sight of thin wisps of dust rising from the bluff, shading the blue sky with a hint of gray. His stomach cramped, as though his body knew something that his soul refused to believe. Lycan trudged up from the mint-scented shore of Cahokia Creek and stopped at the edge of the sprawling settlement to look around. Dusk outlined the mounds with luminous borders of gray. Awe and fear struck Lycan at once. She had never seen this many houses before. Shaggy, thatched roofs filled her vision. People barely glanced at her as she passed.
How can so many live in so small a space? With so many living here, how can they know all the children? If a little girl were hurt and calling for help, would someone she didn't know come to save her?
The thought that they might not sent shivers through Lycan. She passed an old woman who sat outside her house combing a basket full of dog hair to be woven into the beautiful blanket sitting half-finished on the loom beside her. The colors amazed Lycan. Reds and purples so brilliant they must have been stunning in the full light of day. Lycan would have given almost anything to have a dress with that rich shade of purple in it. The mouth-watering smell of corn and fish soup filled the air, taunting Lycan's empty stomach. Lycan gawked at the mounds as she walked. They rose up like small mountains, hemming her in, making it hard to breathe. Big houses stood on the tops of most of them, orange glows lighting the windows. Wanderer had told her once that the Sunborn insisted the mounds be built to reflect the shapes of the sky gods. The mounds reached up into the sky, and the sky gods reached down. As she gazed around, she thought she could distinguish the major stars that formed Hanged Woman's body, and a series of mounds curved southward to represent the noose around Hanged Woman's throat. Lycan followed the mounds and spied a large group of people gathered in front of a house.
Keep them away from me! They're not human! Oh, Sugarberry! What are they? Where's Primrose? Nettle, where are you? Go find Primrose for me! I want my brother!
The people outside had their arms crossed tightly across their breasts nervously.
I don't know. She won't nurse them.
I swear that wolf face one can see. I was talking to Nettle about taking them out and bashing their heads on the rocks, and I turned around and found those pink eyes boring into me.
On the far side of the group, a big, handsome man leaned wearily against the shaggy roof. Tears traced lines through the dust on his face. An old white-haired woman stood beside him, staring at him intently.
I don't care what you think, Nettle. This is no simple matter. Who will we find to nurse those babies? Do you think just anybody will be willing to?
The man dropped his head into his hands.
Stop! Please, Nit. I'll find a way. I don't know how, but I will. Right now, I'm more worried about Primrose. Green Ash cried for him all of last night, and none of us can gain admittance to even discuss it with the Sun Chief.
Theron has lost his mind. Everyone says so. Get used to the idea that you may never see Primrose again.
Theron has gone crazy? And I'm supposed to go into the temple where he lives?
Lycan reached an intersection of pathways, and to her left, at the end of long lines of houses, she saw the clay-plastered walls of the palisades. Men lounged along the shooting platforms, their bows and quivers slung over their shoulders. Lycan's soul shriveled. Fear grew with each beat of her heart.
What if those warriors won't let me in? If those grown-ups couldn't get in, how can I?
Birdman waits for you there.
I don't understand anything anymore. I wish my mother were here. Oh, Foxfire, I'm only 10.
So was I. I was 10 when power called.
The village vanished for a moment, and Lycan again watched Mammoth Calf fall to his knees and roll over in the field of snow. The stone wolf radiated warmth against Lycan's chest.
I'm going, wolf.
Lycan plodded forward until she reached the gate. Six guards strolled near it. She stopped before a tall man with copper beads woven into his braided forelocks. He peered down at her as though annoyed.
I need to see Nightshade, please.
The priestess is busy, girl.
Yes, I know, but could you tell her that Wolf Slayer gave me a message for her?
The warrior stiffened. The other men stared. Lycan tried not to think about the looks they were giving her, as sharp as flakes of obsidian.
What do you know of Wolf Slayer?
I talked to him in the underworld. He seemed nice.
Why would the creatures of the underworld let a little girl like you into the land of the ancestors?
Lycan shrugged. The stone wolf tugged powerfully at the thong around her throat. She gazed down at the bump it made beneath her green dress.
I guess because I'm the keeper of the stone wolf.
That wasn't quite true. Her mother was really the keeper.
The stone wolf of Redweed Village? The one Badgertail was sent to steal? Where is it? Let me see it.
Lycan pulled on the thong and brought the little black wolf out to hold it in her palm. It glinted in the diminishing light. The warrior took a step backward, as though he could feel the power that poured from the wolf.
Stay here. I'll be right back.
Lycan watched him disappear behind the palisades. The log gate slid into place. She glanced at the other warriors, who were studying her with fear in their eyes, then walked a short distance and slumped down on a patch of grass. Lycan drew up her knees and propped her chin on them. The red spirals on her tattered hem looked pathetic. They made her heart ache for Wanderer.
I'm here, Wanderer. I came, just like you and Foxfire said I had to. But I'm scared.
Suddenly, a different thought possessed her, leading her to think of that long-ago day when Wanderer had jumped from the rock overhang to throw rocks at his own shadow. Lycan smiled, but tears filled her eyes. The gate grated open, and Lycan jumped to her feet. But it wasn't Nightshade who stepped through. It wasn't a woman at all. Instead, a man stood there, a man wearing a golden robe and a headdress of beautiful yellow feathers. Intricate tattoos covered his face. He wore splendid copper ear spools, almost as large as his very ears. He lifted her chin and stared at the stone wolf with a predatory gleam in his eyes.
Who are you?
I'm Lycan. I need to see Nightshade.
The man turned.
Get him out of here. He no longer entertains me.
Lycan stumbled sideways when two warriors dragged out a woman. No, it was a man, a berdash in a dress. Black lumps covered his face. Bruises, some yellowed from time, covered the rest of the berdash's exposed skin. He struggled weakly and gazed at Lycan through fever-brilliant eyes.
Run!
The guards dragged him off down the path that led to the south. The man with the golden robe looked at Lycan and waved a hand to his guards.
I want her in my chamber. Bring her.
Orenda jerked her eyes open. She had been half asleep on the cattail mat beneath Nightshade's bed. She held her breath to listen more closely. Wind worried the shaggy roof, shishing and thumping in the darkness. Maybe the girl's cries had been only a dream?
Nightshade, did you hear that?
A fireball made an orange blot in the far corner of the room. At the edge of the glowing halo, Nightshade sat with the tortoise bundle cradled to her breast, peering unblinkingly into a well pot. The light reflected eerily in her wide black eyes.
Nightshade.
Orenda slid out from under the bed. Indigo shadows draped the walls and ceiling like the fluttering hem of a garment. Orenda sniffed to let the pungent fragrance of damp cedar and earth fill her senses. Fog must be hovering around the temple, seeping into the bones of the logs to coax such sweetness from the old wood. Orenda trotted across the room, her tan sleeping kilt padding at her knees, and crouched before Nightshade. Curtains of long hair fell over Nightshade's shoulders, framing her slack face. Orenda bent down and stared into her eyes.
Nightshade, I heard something.
Nightshade looked dead. Orenda wet her lips anxiously. She had been with her mother a few times when they had accidentally disturbed old Marmot's journeys to the underworld.
Dreamers look dead when their souls are swimming in the underworld. It's because their bodies are just barely alive.
Orenda cautiously peeked into the small basket with red spirals on it that sat beside Nightshade's knee. A gray paste smeared the bottom.
Nightshade, there are screams. Did you hear them? I need you. I'm afraid.
When no answer came, Orenda pulled back Nightshade's long hair to scrutinize her temples. Gray paste smudged them.
Just like old Marmot's.
She let go of the curtain of hair and sat back, watching it sway before it settled again over Nightshade's cheeks. Orenda hugged her knees to her chest and tried to force her frightened mind to think. Nightshade had been attempting to enter the underworld for weeks, but hadn't been able to. Orenda wondered why First Woman had decided to open the gate to the Well of the Ancestors on this cold, damp night. Orenda's heart pounded. A chill thread of terror coiled in her stomach.
It's a little girl's voice.
She put a hand on Nightshade's cheek and patted it hard.
Nightshade, I'm afraid. There's another little girl in the temple. I don't know.
She tensed. It could be the girl who had been talking to her in her dreams. The one who kept telling her not to worry, that she was going to go talk to First Woman and make everything all right again.
But if he got the little girl... No.
She jumped to her feet. Her mind began spinning panicked images of what Theron did to little girls.
No, it can't happen to someone else.
Orenda threw off her sleeping kilt as she ran to Nightshade's bed. She slipped on her red dress with the rolled-up sleeves, then combed out the tangles in her long hair with her fingers.
Nightshade! Nightshade, please! Wake up!
But Nightshade didn't move. Orenda peeked around the door hanging. The firebowl beside their doorway cast a radiant aura over the soundless, deserted hall. But the bowl at the end of the corridor had been snuffed.
Sometimes that just happens, especially on windy nights. A stray whiff of wind might penetrate the cracks.
Orenda tiptoed down the corridor to the first intersection. The darkness wrapped her like a smothering blanket. She listened for any sound. Hearing none, she hesitantly turned into the corridor that led to his chamber. Bracing her back against the cold wall, she slid slowly along while her lungs gasped for air. Passing the entry to the temple, she listened again, then proceeded onward. Two guards stood on either side of the doorway to Theron's chamber. The tall, ugly one, named Hoofprint, glared uneasily as she approached. The other, skinny, with a belly that bulged through his war shirt, frowned. Orenda could not recall his name.
Stop it! Why are you hurting me? I don't understand!
Orenda halted, six hands away.
I don't require that you understand, child, only that you obey. I am the great Sun Chief. Everyone obeys me, or they die. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes!
Do as I say and get over there on that mat and lie down.
But why?
Because you're a pretty little thing, and I want to look at you. Yes, that's it. I want to look at you.
Orenda's knees shook so badly that she could barely remain standing. She looked pleadingly at the guards, but they had turned to stare down the hall, pretending they heard nothing. She fought with herself, twisting her hands, trying to figure out what she could do.
No!
Orenda acted instinctively. She dove and crawled beneath the door hanging on hands and knees.
Hey, wait, no, stop, don't!
One of the guards clutched at her foot, but she jerked loose and kept crawling. She knew they wouldn't dare follow her inside unless summoned. In an instant, Orenda had reached the middle of the luxurious room. His big bed, mounted high with hides and blankets, sat to her left. Odd pieces of furniture lined the wall beneath the window in front of her, things stolen from faraway places. The window hanging had been lowered so that only a slit of dusk crept into the room, joining the dozen blazing fire bowls that stood in their holders along the walls. Everywhere she looked, power objects watched her through blank eyes. Old Marmot's bundle, with its blue designs, lay in shreds beside the bed, the contents strewn over the floor in a strange glittering wealth. On her right, all of her mother's things, jewelry, robes, sandals, had been thrown into a careless pile. Theron turned, his golden robe whirling around his legs like sunlit clouds. He carried a war club in one hand and a cup of tea in the other. Orenda recognized the strange, detached expression that creased his face.
He's been drinking that Galena tea with crushed morning glory seeds in it.
On occasion, he had forced Orenda's jaws open and poured some of it down her throat, all the time telling her that she would like it. And she had, because the tea had given her the power to take her soul out of her body and hide it in the dirt floor, a place so hard and dark that his hands couldn't find her there. He strutted forward with that arrogant tilt to his chin. A deer-bone stiletto hung from his belt.
Why, Renda, I've been wondering when you'd come to your senses and return to me.
Then he glanced at the other little girl, who crouched in the corner, half hidden behind an old, heavily carved maple bench. The front of her green dress had been torn, and Orenda could see the claw marks on the girl's chest.
I hate you.
Oh, you've gotten bold since you've been with Nightshade, Orenda. Well, all the better. Get over there with Lycan. Hurry it up! I haven't got all night.
No!
I ordered you!
No!
His bat face tensed before he ran at her with his club raised. Orenda jumped to her feet and fled across the room. When she dove behind the bench, Lycan stared at her in astonishment. They held each other's eyes as they had 100 times in their dreams. Lycan grabbed Orenda's arm.
Hurry! Maybe we can get to the window.
They scurried like mice, shutting over furniture when they couldn't crawl beneath the legs.
Orenda! Orenda, stop this game and get up. Do you hear me? I'm tired of this. I said, get up!
The club came down on a loom over Orenda's head, showering her with splinters of wood.
This way, come on!
Lycan dragged Orenda behind a conical fish trap before darting out to make a dash for the window. When Lycan lunged for the sill, he threw a conch shell cup so that it shattered against her back. Theron caught a handful of her hair and jerked her to the floor. Lycan fought, trying to rip her hair from his stony grip. Rage and terror mixed so blindingly inside Orenda that she didn't know what to do. At last, she threw herself at Theron in a biting, kicking whirlwind. Shocked and furious, he released Lycan.
Run, Lycan!
Orenda clamped her teeth on his hand.
Oh, you little animal! Let go! I'll kill you!
Orenda saw Lycan flip by in a swirl of green. Theron lifted Orenda off the ground, swinging his club toward Lycan. Lycan stumbled in a circle before crumpling like a flower wilting on a hot summer day.
Lycan!
Orenda's bite loosened, and Theron shoved her to the floor. Orenda sat staring in horror at Lycan, who lay on her back at the foot of the bed. Blood matted the hair over her right ear and streaked her pretty face in horrifying patterns. Orenda could not take her eyes from Lycan's hands. They had curled into twitching fists. Unthinkingly, she sprang to her feet and attacked, trying to claw Theron to pieces, but he twined his fingers into the back of her red dress and held her out at arm's length.
Oh, Renda. You're going to be a great deal more entertaining now. I'm glad that Nightshade stole you away. Stop it, Renda. That's enough!
She twisted, struggling against his hand. Theron's shadow darkened her face as he bent to stare at her.
I said stop it!
Orenda didn't even feel the blow. Lost in a floating sensation, she watched him remove his robe, throw it onto the floor, and reach for her. As if in a dream, Orenda tried to crawl away, but his hand knotted in her collar. Then he forced her down, and his heavy body pinned her atop the soft fabric of his robe.
So you thought you could get away from this by going to Nightshade? Well, you'll never get away again.
He smashed her head against the floor and used his knee to force her legs apart. Orenda clawed at his face. Theron struck her so hard that it made her head spin.
She can't save you. No one can.
Orenda felt his manhood stiffening against her, and madness overcame her.
Nightshade!
Her hand frantically swept the floor, searching for anything to strike him with. She touched something cool and smooth in the tangle of his discarded robe. Her fingers tightened around the deerbone stiletto. Badgertail took the path that angled toward the western gate. Budworm strode beside him, his wary eyes scanning the lifeless houses that lined their route, as if he expected some malignant force to spring out and pounce on him. They had all been edgy, jumping at the slightest movement in the grass.
Why is it so quiet? We didn't see anyone working the corn or squash fields.
Maybe they've taken cover. And if they have, blessed Father Son, that means that Theron already knows of my defeat from warriors who've come dragging in. He's probably been planning my death for days.
Badgertail clutched his club tightly. This section of the village belonged to the Hornspoon clan. Window and door hangings flapped in the breeze, revealing empty interiors with baskets and pots still in place.
Where have the people gone? Did they rush away so fast that they didn't even have the time to pack?
Wanderer and Vol followed behind them, while Flute and Longtail brought up the rear. Though night had settled on the village, only a few stars poked through the charcoal blanket above. The moon hung like a crescent of silver behind the temple mound. Over the field of thatched roofs, he could just make out the sharpened tips of the palisade poles. Warriors walked the shooting platforms. Budworm's round face looked haunted when he turned to Badgertail.
Do you think that Theron could have ordered the Commonborn to flee?
I hope he did. It would have been prudent. So, he probably didn't.
Badgertail had to get to Theron quickly to explain the situation. His gut roiled. He dreaded Theron's rage more than Pataga's military strength. As they stepped onto the paths that led through the Blue Blanket Clan section, dogs ran out of houses to yap at their heels. A haze of indigo smoke draped lazily around the tops of the mounds. It smelled brittle and musty. Fireballs lit luminous lines around window and door hangings. Occasionally, a hanging would be pulled back, and eyes would peek out at them as they passed. Normally, at this time of year, people would have been sitting outside, laughing and talking, throwing sticks for the dogs, until the nightly chill drove them inside. Badgertail picked up his pace, hurrying to reach the western gate. When he got close enough, he broke into a trot, and the warriors on the platform saw him.
Look! It's Badgertail!
He rounded the corner of the last house and ran head-on into a pack of warriors racing out to meet him. Elkhorn broke through the crowd to hug Badgertail so hard that it drove the air from his lungs.
Thank Father Sun! We feared you were dead. Locust told us about Redweed, but after the thrashing we took...
How is Locust? She and Cloud Shadow made it back all right?
100 hands thrust through the tangle of bodies to clasp him. Badgertail made every attempt to clasp each one in turn, while he watched Elkhorn's face darken.
What is it, Elkhorn? Is it Locust? Tell me.
Elkhorn ran a hand through his bristly ridge of hair and began leading the way toward the open gate. The swarm of warriors followed.
She's all right. I mean, physically. I had to post 4 guards on her house, Badgertail. I've never seen her so enraged. She tried to storm the temple, alone, to kill the Sun Chief. It took 3 warriors to stop her, even with her wounds. At first, well, I thought it was her fever. I mean, I thought it had driven her mad.
Badgertail stopped before the gate.
Say what you mean. What drove her to this?
The Sun Chief captured Primrose while we were out on the battle walk. Apparently he tortured him.
Tortured?
Badgertail's heart skipped, his blood pounding in sudden anger. He wondered how 3 warriors could have stopped her.
Take Wanderer and Vol inside. Hold them by the gate until I return.
Certainly, but where are you?
I'll be at Locust's. Give me 2 fingers of time.
Badgertail ran with all his might, winding down the empty path that fronted the palisades.